Good day. I am Jonas of Newland, a scholar of Latin and Roman history. Today I'd like to share with you the story of an amazing man, Laurentius Iulus Amalgamaticus. Laurentius was an able but controversial leader in his time, and I believe you will appreciate his story. To tell it, I have translated from the Latin account of a noted scribe and keen observer of the era, one Brendanus Webus. So without further ado, let me begin. Provincial governor Laurentius Iulus adjusted the thick leather belt around his broadening girth as he gazed out on the plain of Heratuscany. He glanced admiringly at his image in the polished coat of arms at the door of his headquarters in Hustings, a city straddling the main road south. Its motto, Urbis et Ruris Concordia, proclaimed town and country were in harmony. But he had had enough of words. It would soon be time for action. Once protected by swampland, Hustings had been turned into orchards during the reign of the fruit merchant, James Watticus, and then into vineyards by later invasions of the Huns and the Vidals. Those vineyards, now stretched away to the foothills in the west, were as a boy, Laurentius had stood on his family farm, overlooking the plains below. Like then, the only pieces of raised land were the rugged bluff occupied by the Nepereans near the coast, and the Martyr Peak rising above the wealthy enclave of Havis Northus to the east. Havis Northus had been absorbed into the Hustings boundaries decades again after a minor battle. The next battle would be a much bigger challenge. A parchment map lay on the heavy table in front of him. The two cities were marked in big letters. Thick, wriggly blue lines between them showed the course of the two mighty rivers. To Titus Chorus and the Narus Roris, they had been a natural dividing point for the two cities, but not for much longer, if he could help it. Standing on the town wall of Hustings, Laurentius looked to the coast, where steam from a dung-drying plant on the shore of Awatotis sent a plume of steam into the blue sky. The mid-morning sun hurt his eyes, but he smiled quietly to himself. The Nepereans would never expect him to attack into the sun, and he would be at the golden statue of Aphrodites on the Paradis Marinus before they had time to react. Once they had reached the fabled sound shell and the golden bell of Veronica, the city and the province would be his. His secret weapon would be thousands of gleaming coins, all bearing his face, which would be used to reflect the sun back into their eyes. He had forewarned them of his plan to unite the two cities, but they had laughed at him, and now he would have the last laugh. Laurentius knew that Nepereon destroyed in 31 BC and rebuilt during the reign of Artaxerxes was vulnerable, relying on boatloads of tourists from Germanicus and sales of straw hats and old furs to survive. Its popular ruler, Barbarus Arnatus, had declared that Nepereans did not recognize anyone outside their walls. But Laurentius suspected she was in the hands of a fanatical Nepereon cult called Status Quotus, led by a man called Bertus, who wanted a return to the times of Artaxerxes. His supporters were preparing for a week-long celebration in Februarius, and Lorenz's plan to strike when the streets were clogged for the parade of old charioteers. The governor strode out of his red-tiled building to his chariot, frowning as he saw the scribe from an underground newspaper, Babus, coming towards him. He knew this ferret wanted to question him again about the city's planned amphitheatre on the outskirts of Hastings, and the role of the moneylender Sam the Celt, but Laurentius ignored him. The amphitheatre, which would be named the Laurentian Colosseum, was to be his legacy, and a fitting reminder of his years of rule and conquest. He would soon pass the earthworks for the amphitheatre on his way to the chariot port on the northern outskirts of Napierian. It was an important day. He had been summoned by the Minister of Regional Forums, Rodus Hydus, who shared his bold ambition to bring people of the plains together. The minister had recently enraged the warlords of the northern city of Jaffus with his own plan to have a single ruler for the entire city. Laurentius had been impressed with the minister's almost arrogant strategy. He wished his own campaign had been as bold. A costly, drawn-out battle over a proposed new settlement at the beach of Oceania several years ago had left him scarred. He had hesitated in the face of a popular revolt, but would not make the same mistake with the amphitheatre. While the townspeople had complained that the amphitheatre was too far away, and only a few javelin throwers and members of local chariot clubs would benefit, he was determinedly pushing on, even when Sam the Celt had swept his IOU off the table and walked away. He vowed that the Laurentian Colosseum would rise from the fertile fields. He didn't need them anymore, because Laurentius was cultivating friends in high places. His old tourist party held the coffers in the capital, Wellingtonius, and he knew his bold move on Napierian would be seen very favorably by the minister. Who knows how far down the corridors of power this could lead? As he boarded the chariot for the journey to the capital, Laurentius looked up at the hills of Napierian, the light glinting off the now vacant infirmary on its skyline. That had been the first real victory, the turning point in the long struggle for supremacy between the cities. Gradually the boundaries had changed, with Hastings now almost encircling Napierian. Beyond the northern and southern borders of Hastings district, the rural hamlets of Waiura and Waipakororis were desperate, burdened by rising land taxes for years, and lands ravished by drought. They would be next, thought Laurentius. As his chariot gained speed and the twin cities disappeared into the haze behind him, he began to think of more important matters, like a name for the amalgamated region. Laurentium sounded about right.